Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Ortiz versus Webster.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Christopher Kelleher on behalf of the appellant Arbelito Ortiz. Virtually every concern this Court raised in its prior decision remains. Remand has resolved nothing. Dr. Webster had two opportunities to tell this Court why he rejected the opinions of seven different medical personnel and forced Ortiz to suffer for years. In both instances, he has offered platitudes and half-truths. In fairness to counsel, Dr. Webster's actions are difficult to defend. A perfect example of this is what transpired after the district court granted Dr. Webster summary judgment in 2008. At that point, Dr. Webster refused Ortiz's surgery because it was not medically necessary. So even as late as 2008, Dr. Webster was perfectly content to let Ortiz suffer indefinitely. Moreover, Dr. Webster's 2008 refusal renders his reliance on his expert disingenuous. Dr. Webster's actions were not based on Ortiz's condition or the proper standard of care or really anything else other than the ebb and flow of this litigation. Frankly, Your Honors, the district court was correct in finding no issues of fact. It just found for the wrong side. The facts demonstrate deliberate indifference exists as a matter of law. For there is no dispute that Dr. Webster knew surgery was needed. There is no dispute Dr. Webster knew Ortiz had difficulty seeing, had discharge seeping from his eyes.
What do we do if there are varying and different, obviously, medical opinions as to what should be done?
Well, Your Honor, in this instance, it's pretty lopsided. There's seven different medical personnel on one side and Dr. Ranadetta on the other side. Additionally, Dr. Webster himself, in June of 2003, said that surgery would be needed and that Ortiz's vision was 20/100. And under Dr. Maturi, Dr. Webster's expert, that condition warrants surgery. So in essence, there's not really a disagreement. It's simply Dr. Webster refused surgery when he knew it was needed. These undisputed facts satisfy deliberate indifference for five independent reasons. And the first is Dr. Webster knew of Ortiz's condition, knew he was suffering, and yet disregarded it. Second, Dr. Webster ignored the multiple requests for surgery by eye specialists. Third, Dr. Webster persisted with the pointless treatment of eye drops for over 6 years, even though Ortiz's condition never improved one iota. Fourth, Dr. Webster insisted on the easiest treatment of eye drops, again, knowing that it was not doing anything. And fifth, Dr. Webster endorsed the years of delay in surgery, withholding treatment he knew would alleviate Ortiz's plight. Dr. Webster has responded to none of these points. And this silence establishes the propriety of deliberate indifference under this court's de novo review. Indeed, the response brief evades the critical issues of this appeal. Why was surgery proper in 2008, but not in 2003? What about Ortiz's condition changed? Not a thing. Indeed, under Dr. Webster's logic, eye drops should still be used right now. Instead, all Ortiz can do is cite general medical propositions. The actual records of Ortiz, too damning. While Ortiz focuses on the treating physicians, Dr. Webster focuses on an after-the-fact expert. And even so, this expert correlates with Ortiz's position and vindicates the surgery recommendations of Drs. McLaughlin and Connor. Consider what Dr. Webster's expert said. Surgery is needed when visual acuity declines below 20/50. In 2001, Ortiz's visual acuity was 20/80. In 2003, it had regressed to 2,100. Thus, per Dr. Maturi, surgery was necessary in 2001. And as his condition worsened over the next 6 years, surgery became even more needed. Moving to the no town trip policy. This policy speaks for itself, and the transparency of this notation has left Dr. Webster grasping for straws. He cannot deny that no individual on death row was given outside medical treatment from 2001 to 2005. And the question eviscerating Dr. Webster's position on this issue is this. Dr. Lawson, who as the URC chairman had final authority for surgeries, approved Ortiz's surgery. How could the URC deny the surgery? At the very least, Your Honors, there are questions of fact on this issue. In sum, upon Ortiz's first day at the Terre Haute prison, he had pterygia. The officials knew it. The doctors knew it. The inmates knew it. And everyone knew that he suffered and needed surgery. Yet for 6 years, nothing happened. This is deliberate indifference defined. Additionally, the no town trip policy is written confirmation of everything wrong with this case and the medical care provided at the Terre Haute facility. Finally, and most telling, Dr. Webster approved surgery in 2006, but then reversed course and denied it in 2008, despite Ortiz's condition not changing one bit. This is Kafkaesque. Accountability is needed, and the district court should be reversed.
See, it was approved in 06. Dr. Webster?
I'm sorry?
Dr. Webster approved it in 06?
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
And in response to what did he approve it?
Well, Your Honor, I would assert this litigation. And after the district court granted him summary judgment in September of 2007, a few months later, he denies the surgery. And then, of course, this court reversed in June of 08, and 2 weeks after this court's reversal, Dr. Webster approved the surgery, and Ortiz was finally given surgery in 2008.
Well, he had two surgeries, didn't he? Have one early, which was, what was right, the date? Right. When was the first one?
In 2006. Okay. He had it on his left eye, and then, as we point out in the brief, he should have been given follow-up appointments that never happened. The condition came back. It got worse. And, of course, his right eye from January 2001 up until 08 was never treated. So if there are no further questions, I'll reserve.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Mr. McCuskey.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Will McCuskey, AUSA, on behalf of Dr. Webster. This Court should affirm summary judgment was appropriate because Mr. Ortiz was not able to raise a tribal issue of fact as to either of the essential elements of his deliberate indifference claim. Now, counsel got up here and talked a lot about...
Counsel say anything that was not borne out by the record?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that...
No. Listen to the question again. Did counsel say anything that was not borne out by the record?
I disagree with some of
them. I don't care whether you disagree. I want to know, did he say something that was not in the record?
Yes.
What?
Dr. Maturi, the expert retained by Dr. Webster, did not say that surgery was necessary, in his opinion. It's.
What did he say?
He said that as of 2006, and if you don't mind, Your Honor, I'll just read it, his visual acuity had declined without correction to 2050, this decline in visual acuity could be treated with removal of pterygium surgically, which was performed. That's not an opinion that surgery was mandated. It's not supported.
Do you think it has to have a gun to your eye before the surgery is mandated, or as a matter of good medical practice, should be done?
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
The question is not whether it's mandated. He could go blind and not have the surgery. But the medical expert opinion said that surgery was appropriate to cure the situation, the problem that existed?
Your Honor, the expert opinion was that surgery could have been done and was done. It's not that it was mandated. And I disagree that the record substantiates that blindness was a necessary outcome of the course of treatment that Dr. Webster...
Pain?
Your Honor, there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Ortiz complained of pain until his 2006 appointment with an outside consultant, Dr. Rutan.
There is evidence of pain in the record, however.
He later on submitted a declaration where he said he was suffering pain. Your Honor, under the deliberate indifference standard, the first prong is it's objective. And as I argue in the brief, any reasonable doctor, at the very least, is going to have to look at records and take what the record says before making decisions. And if the record has no indication, a subjective indication of pain on the part of the patient, how is the doctor supposed to divine that? All we have is a diagnosis of pterygia. Pterygia, even if you look at the sources, the medical sources that Mr. Ortiz himself has cited, that's typically a cosmetic concern. It's not even a painful concern, typically. This could be a different case if Mr. Ortiz had talked about consuming pain, excruciating pain, when he went to see his medical providers at the prison in the period covered by the complaint, which, again, is from the time Dr. Webster came on duty in 2002 until the time the complaint was filed in fall of 2005. I'm listening to counsel talk about things that happened in 2006 and 2008. The only possible bearing I would say that has on anything is retrospectively perhaps looking to see if this was a serious medical condition that Dr. Webster knew of and had the subjective intent that would satisfy deliberate indifference. There was no amended complaint. There was no submission, as far as I can tell from the record, of exhausting additional remedies if Mr. Ortiz had some problem with his medical care post-2006, post the complaint. He should have said something about it. We're hearing about it today in court.
So in your view, or perhaps in the complaint's view, the issue before us or before the court, wherever it is between 2002 and 2005,
yes,
just those years. And after that, even though that there were two subsequent surgeries, obviously, but
yes,
the one, both apparently in response to court orders or opinions. Is that coincidental or is that a genuine reaction that he's claiming?
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record. I understand counsel can certainly draw that conclusion. I guess anybody can draw a causation conclusion about whether medical care was brought on by a lawsuit. That's not substantiated. What is substantiated is that Dr. Webster and the URC met in 2006, I suppose, and they went ahead and approved a referral to Dr. Rutan. And by the way, when Dr. Rutan met with Mr. Ortiz, it was at that time, and that's the first time it's substantiated in his medical record, that he complained of some sort of pain. The irritation, the dryness, the redness of the eyes, that's there. That was there throughout the medical record from 2001 on. But now the first mention of pain. Unfortunately, the record does not indicate what thought process the URC went through, that Dr. Webster went through in approving the outside surgery in 2006, but it's certainly conceivable.
That would certainly come out in the trial, course of a trial, wouldn't it?
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Certainly come out in the course of a trial, would it not?
What the URC discussed? Presumably so, Your Honor.
No.
Yes. But again, that was post-complaint.
No.
When the URC met and approved Dr. Rutan's consultation, that was post-filing of the complaint.
He's on death row?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Terre Haute's one of how many federal facilities house death row prisoners?
Well, on a permanent, ongoing basis, Your Honor, it's the only one.
How many are there, do you know?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor. And I don't believe it's in the record. But, you know, and I would like to take that opportunity then, you bringing up death row, to discuss the no town trips notation. To be sure, this court had concerns with that unexplained notation the last time this case came up on appeal. After remand, I believe that those concerns should be satisfied. We've got Debbie Lamping, a health services coordinator at the time, who was working for Dr. Lawson, and she explained what that was. Dr. Lawson liked to have a notation on the URC form that reflects whether or not this is a case in which a prisoner is going to be sent outside the institution for a town trip for medical care. That's it. This, and again, the notation, it's undisputed, was from 2001, which precedes Dr. Webster's tenure here. So the notation is explained. It has no conceivable tie to Dr. Webster. There's nothing in the record to show that he followed some illegal policy of restricting medical care for death row inmates. To the contrary. In fact, in Mr. Ortiz's specific case, Dr. Maturi's opinion shows that the course of care that Mr. Ortiz received throughout the period relevant to the complaint was within the standard of care. And if that's the case, Mr. Ortiz couldn't prove a medical malpractice claim. And if he couldn't prove a medical malpractice claim, by definition, he could not meet the higher standard of showing deliberate indifference. That's what the Supreme Court has said that. This Court has said that.
Do the people on death row have the same access to treatment and medical exam as other prisoners?
I don't know. They just have to. It's got to be consistent with the security needs of the prison, and it's cited to in the brief and also in the program statement. I believe it's 6031. There's different care classifications, and those care classifications define the sort of medical treatment that an individual prisoner can get. Dr. Webster, in his declarations, he's had several in this case, but in at least one, explained that Mr. Ortiz's pterygia, again, not a serious medical condition based on what we see in the record and what these outside sources say, but that was not within a classification where he needed to go outside the institution.
Do non-death row prisoners, is there any, I guess, anything in the record that shows that they may have been labeled a no-town trip? You know what I'm asking?
In other words, a non-death row inmate also had a no-town trip notation. It's not in the record, Your Honor, and I've done a lot of litigation for the Bureau. I've never heard of it. I don't know. I don't know, Your Honor.
But there are, I assume there are, I don't even know what the prison population is in Terre Haute or what it's made up of. Or that. This just happens to be where the federal death penalty people are.
Yes, Your Honor.
Housed. I assume its general population consists of a whole lot of other prisoners who need medical care of varying degrees.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I just, if we don't know, okay, but the known town trip may be just a shorthand way of saying we don't need to send them outside medical help.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's consistent with all prisoners as opposed to just, I guess, Mr. Ortiz or whoever else. You don't know how many death row prisoners are there now? Or?
I don't, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't believe it's in the record.
All right.
It has a minimum or medium security facility as well, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And there's a federal prison camp as well. Again, all with different security classifications and necessity. Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
Well, that's all right. Do they all have medical directors, each facility, or is it one medical director for the entire?
Your Honor, I believe, and again, I'm not sure if it's in the record, but my understanding is Dr. Webster is the clinical director for the entire complex, which would include the death row, it would include the medium security, it would include the camp. He's the clinical director for the entire complex.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time? You have 2 minutes, counsel.
Your Honors, Dr. Webster's position in this litigation has again been purely reactionary. The best embodiment of that is, again, on June 1st, 2008, he denies surgery. Excuse me, May 1st. He denies surgery. This court reverses June 13th, and magically, 2 weeks later, 1 month after he denies surgery, he approves surgery.
So it's really the second surgery.
Correct, Your Honor. So, again, I believe that is a perfect example of Dr. Webster's position just purely being based on this litigation. Additionally, as to counsel's points about pain, there's no authority, no case law that says an individual must use the word pain.
No, but we have a situation here where there are various medical opinions, and that generally does not permit this type of success in this lawsuit.
True, Your Honor, generally. But again, this case is unique because Dr. Webster in 2003 noted that surgery would be needed in the next, likely be needed in the next 2 years. Dr. Webster, again, the defendant in this action, said at that point in 2003, Ortiz's eye condition was 20/100. And that's what makes this case different, along with the fact that you have a six-year delay. And in that time frame, Ortiz suffered. And he had itchiness, he had irritation, impaired vision, foreign body sensation in his eye. So this, again, is a unique case. And granted, I recognize the case law. I know that this is a difficult standard to satisfy. But the facts here and what Dr. Webster knew and when he knew it demonstrates deliberate indifference.
Is it in the record, or does it matter that with the two operations, what his present vision rating is?
I can tell you right now, and it's off the record, it's not very good. It's improved, obviously, from what it was, but he's still having issues. And whether that's because of the six-year delay and simply using ineffective treatment.
And I also just wondered how bad it was just inherently without that disease. And
right, and that's just from day one, from January 19th, they said that he had eye problems and astigmatism, likely.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you.
I thank the court for its time.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the second case this morning.